Chapter 144. Dobbin's child, which bore her name and was christened by the Rev. James Crawley, who succeeded his father in the living, and a pretty close friendship subsisted between the two lads, George and Rodden, who hunted and shot together in the vacations, were both entered of the same college at Cambridge, and quarreled with each other about Lady Jane's daughter, with whom they were both, of course, in love. A match between George and that young lady was long a favorite scheme of both the matrons, though I have heard that Miss Crawley herself inclined towards her cousin. Mrs. Rodden Crawley's name was never mentioned by either family. There were reasons why all should be silent regarding her. For wherever Mr. Joseph Sedley went, she traveled likewise, and that infatuated man seemed to be entirely her slave. The colonel's lawyers informed him that his brother-in-law had effected a heavy insurance upon his life, whence it was probable that he had been raising money to discharge debts. He procured prolonged leave of absence from the East India House, and indeed, his infirmities were daily increasing. On hearing the news about the insurance, Amelia, in a good deal of alarm, entreated her husband to go to Brussels, where Joe's then was, and inquire into the state of his affairs. The colonel quitted home with reluctance, for he was deeply immersed in his history of the Punjab, which still occupies him, and much alarmed about his little daughter, whom he idolizes, and who was just recovering from the chicken pox, and went to Brussels and found Joe's living at one of the enormous hotels in that city. Mrs. Crawley, who had her carriage, gave entertainments, and lived in a very genteel manner, occupied another suite of apartments in the same hotel. The colonel, of course, did not desire to see that lady, or even think proper to notify his arrival at Brussels, except privately to Joe's by a message through his valet. Joe's begged the colonel to come and see him that night, when Mrs. Crawley would be at a soiree, and when they could meet alone. He found his brother-in-law in a condition of pitiable infirmity and dreadfully afraid of Rebecca, though eager in his praises of her. She tended him through a series of unheard-of illnesses with a fidelity most admirable. As he had been a daughter to him. But oh, for God's sake, do come and live near me, and see me sometimes, whimpered out the unfortunate man. The colonel's brow darkened at this. He can't, Joe's, he said. Considering the circumstances, Amelia can't visit you. I swear to you on the Bible, gasped out Joseph, wanting to kiss the book, that she is as innocent as a child, as spotless as your own wife. It may be so, said the colonel gloomily, but Emmy can't come to you. Be a man, Joe's. Break off this disreputable connection. Come home to your family. We hear your affairs are involved. Involved? Cried Joe's. Who has told such calumnies? All my money is placed out most advantageously. Mrs. Crawley, that is, I mean, it is laid out to the best interest. You are not in debt, then? Why did you insure your life? I thought a little present to her in case anything happened. And you know my health is so delicate, common gratitude, you know, and I intend to leave all my money to you, and I can spare it out of my income, indeed I can, cried out William's weak brother-in-law. The colonel besought Joe's to fly at once, to go back to India, whither Mrs. Crawley could not follow him, to do anything to break off a connection which might have the most fatal consequences to him. Joe's clasped his hands and cried, he would go back to India. He would do anything, only he must have time. They mustn't say anything to Mrs. Crawley, she'd kill me, if she knew it. You don't know what a terrible woman she is, the poor wretch said. Then, why not come away with me? Said Dobbin in reply, but Joe's had not the courage. He would see Dobbin again in the morning, he must on no account say that he had been there. He must go now. Becky might come in. And Dobbin quitted him, full of forebodings. He never saw Joe's more. 3 months afterwards, Joseph Sedley died at Aix-la-Chapelle. It was found that all his property had been muddled away in speculations, and was represented by valueless shares in different bubble companies. All his available assets were the £2,000 for which his life was insured, and which were left equally between his beloved Esther Amelia, wife of Anne C., comma, and his friend and invaluable attendant during sickness, Rebecca, wife of Lieutenant Colonel Rawdon Crawley, C. B.B., who was appointed administratrix. The solicitor of the insurance company swore it was the blackest case that ever had come before him, talked of sending a commission to Aix to examine into the death, and the company refused payment of the policy. But Mrs., or Lady Crawley, as she styled herself, came to town at once, attended with her solicitors, Messrs. Burke, Thurtell, and Hayes, of Thavies Inn, and dared the company to refuse the payment. They invited examination. They declared that she was the object of an infamous conspiracy, which had been pursuing her all through life, and triumphed finally. The money was paid, and her character established, but Colonel Dobbin sent back his share of the legacy to the insurance office, and rigidly declined to hold any communication with Rebecca. She never was Lady Crawley, though she continued so to call herself. His Excellency Colonel Rawdon Crawley died of yellow fever at Coventry Island, most deeply beloved and deplored, and 6 weeks before the demise of his brother, Sir Pitt. The estate consequently devolved upon the present Sir Rawdon Crawley, Bart. He too has declined to see his mother, to whom he makes a liberal allowance, and who, besides, appears to be very wealthy. The baronet lives entirely at Queen's Crawley, with Lady Jane and her daughter, whilst Rebecca, Lady Crawley, chiefly hangs about Bath and Cheltenham, where a very strong party of excellent people consider her to be a most injured woman. As he has her enemies. Who has not? Her life is her answer to them. She busies herself in works of piety. She goes to church, and never without a footman. Her name is in all the charity lists. The destitute orange girl, the neglected washerwoman, the distressed muffin man find in her a fast and generous friend. She is always having stalls at fancy fairs for the benefit of these hapless beings. Emmy, her children, and the Colonel, coming to London some time back, found themselves suddenly before her at one of these fairs. She cast down her eyes demurely, and smiled as they started away from her. Emmy scurrying off on the arm of George, now grown a dashing young gentleman, and the Colonel seizing up his little Janie, of whom he is fonder than of anything in the world, fonder even than of his history of the Punjab. Fonder than he is of me, Emmy thinks with a sigh, but he never said a word to Amelia that was not kind and gentle, or thought of a want of hers that he did not try to gratify. Ah! Vanitas vanitatum! Which of us is happy in this world? Which of us has his desire, or, having it, is satisfied? Come, children, let us shut up the box and the puppets, for our play is played out. End of Project Gutenberg's Vanity Fair, by William Macapus Thackeray, *... End of the Project Gutenberg ebook Vanity Fair, *... This file should be named VFAIR12. TTXT or VFAIR12. Zip corrected editions of our ebooks get a new number, VFAIR11. TTXT versions based on separate sources get new letter, VFAIR10A TTXT, produced by July Iru, JULIANA Edgar. UUKER. EDU, Project Gutenberg ebooks are often created from several printed editions, all of which are confirmed as public domain in the U.S., unless a copyright notice is included. Thus, we usually do not keep ebooks in compliance with any particular paper edition. We are now trying to release all our ebooks 1 year in advance of the official release dates, leaving time for better editing. Please be encouraged to tell us about any error or corrections, even years after the official publication date. Please note neither this listing nor its contents are final till midnight of the last day of the month of any such announcement. The official release date of all Project Gutenberg ebooks is at midnight, Central Time, of the last day of the stated month. A preliminary version may often be posted for suggestion. comment and editing by those who wish to do so. Most people started our websites at HTTP Gutenberg Ennet or HTTP Promo Ennet page. These websites include award-winning information about Project Gutenberg, including how to donate, how to help produce our new ebooks, and how to subscribe to our email newsletter free. Dot, those of you who want to download any ebook before announcement can get to them as follows, and just download by date. This is also a good way to get them instantly upon announcement, as the indexes our catalogers produce obviously take a while after an announcement goes out in the Project Gutenberg newsletter. HTTP www.iBiblio.org Gutenberg ETEXT03 or FTP FTP iBiblio.org PubDocs Books Gutenberg ETEXT03 or ETEXT02010998997969599494939292991 or 90. Just search by the first five letters of the file name you want, as it appears in our newsletters. Information about Project Gutenberg, one page. We produce about $2 million for each hour we work. The time it takes us, a rather conservative estimate, is 50 hours to get any ebook selected, entered, proofread, edited, copyright searched and analyzed, the copyright letters written, etc. Our projected audience is 100 million readers. If the value per text is nominally estimated at $1, then we produce $2 million per hour in 2002 as we release over 100 new text files per month. 1240 more ebooks in 2001 for a total of 4,000 plus. We are already on our way to trying for 2,000 more ebooks in 2002. If they reach just 1-2% of the world's population, then the total will reach over half a trillion ebooks given away by year's end. The goal of Project Gutenberg is to give away 1 trillion ebooks. This is 10,000 titles each to 100 million readers, which is only about 4% of the present number of computer users. Here is the briefest record of our progress. Asterisk means estimated. Colon, ebooks year month, 1971 July 10, 1991 January 100, 1994 January 1000, 1997 August 1500, 1998 October 2000, 1999 December 2500, 2000 December 3000, 2001 November 4000, 2001 October November 6000, 2002 DECEMBER asterisk 9000 2003 NOVEMBER asterisk 10000 2004 JANUARY asterisk. The Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation has been created to secure a future for Project Gutenberg into the next millennium. We need your donations more than ever. As of February 2002, contributions are being solicited from people and organizations in Alabama, Alaska, Arkansas, Connecticut, Delaware, District of Columbia, Florida, Georgia, Hawaii, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Kentucky, Louisiana, Maine, Massachusetts, Michigan, Mississippi, Missouri, Montana, Nebraska, Nevada, New Hampshire, New Jersey, New Mexico, New York, North Carolina, Ohio, Oklahoma, Oregon, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, South Carolina, South Dakota, Tennessee, Texas, Utah, Vermont, Virginia, Washington, West Virginia, Wisconsin, and Wyoming. We have filed in all 50 states now, but these are the only ones that have responded. As the requirements for other states are met, additions to this list will be made, and fundraising will begin in the additional states. Please feel free to ask to check the status of your state. In answer to various questions we have received on this, we are constantly working on finishing the paperwork to legally request donations in all 50 states. If your state is not listed, and you would like to know if we have added it since the list you have, just ask. While we cannot solicit donations from people in states where we are not yet registered, we know of no prohibition against accepting donations from donors in these states who approach us with an offer to donate. International donations are accepted, but we don't know anything about how to make them tax deductible, or even if they can be made deductible, and don't have the staff to handle it, even if there are ways. Donations by check or money order may be sent to Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, PMB 113-1739 University Avenue, Oxford, MS 38655-4109. Contact us if you want to arrange for a wire transfer or payment method other than by check or money order. The Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation has been approved by the U.S. Internal Revenue Service as a 501(c)(3) organization with an employee identification number 64622154. Donations are tax deductible to the maximum extent permitted by law. As fundraising requirements for other states are met, additions to this list will be made, and fundraising will begin in the additional states. We need your donations more than ever. You can get up-to-date donation information online at http://www.ggutenberg.netdonation.html. If you can't reach Project Gutenberg, you can always email directly to Michael S. Hart, H-A-R-T at pobox.com. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.